So Eric, when one of us becomes the Lisan Al Ghaib, will we have to fight each other in a knife fight, or will it be like our previous discussion about pistols, where we'll just like look at each other like, we're not doing this, are we? We're not gonna. We're not committing to this.
Whichever one of us is the. Is the one the other has to just do the Javier Bardem and just like become the biggest fan and believer. I feel like that is what would happen.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense
in this context. Yes.
Neither of us has Austin Butler personality, face, any of it.
Just I have a shaved head. That's the closest thing I got.
Mm-hmm. That does put you one step closer. Yes, 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 indeed. Yes, yeah. We would both fall for that French actress whose name I cannot remember. I just refuse to remember her name, sadly, unfortunately.
Léa Seydoux.
We've done multiple podcasts, hours on her as an actress and how good she is. I just can't.
We could talk about her James Bond movies for like at least 3 hours.
Yes, just I remember it as we're talking about it, and then I forget it. but yes, both of us very into her. That's one thing we have in common, and with him. And I do think that she could seduce us into producing heirs that are backup heirs in case Paul Atreides dies. To keep the Harkonnens alive. If you can't tell, we're really starting this episode with some Dune talk.
I mean, also, we're if you just click on this podcast because you saw Dune 2, this is video scope at podcast where me and Arlen just start every time while talking as if we're in the movie. But yeah, this is a podcast about the movie. This is not an improv podcast.
No. We don't have the time or attention for that.
I feel like I'd rather die than do that.
Yes, I agree.
Yes, the Dune 2, great movie.
Yes.
The Denis Villeneuve movie. I think I saw the list of like the 10 biggest like opening weekend theaters, and the number 3 was the one I saw it at, and number 7, 8, and 9 or something, 3 other ones were in like Montreal's vicinity. So
wow.
Quebec loves Denis Villeneuve, and we support our boy.
Nice to hear. That's very good to
it's nice to have like a local director in the way that he's from here blow up in that way. I mean, I've seen them even have in a restaurant before. I know people that went to school with his son, in film school with his son, actually.
I'm proud to say Spokane did not do the same for David Lynch. We did not support David Lynch. We rejected it. That thought just occurred to me.
Inland Empire is not a huge blockbuster hit in Spokane, Washington.
No. Twin Peaks, big here. Twin Peaks, because Spokane is in The Return. That's the airport that they go to. And they're like, we're only 2 hours away from Twin Peaks. And they actually shot in the airport. But not big fans of Inland Empire. Definitely rejected the original Dune. absolutely. Among other things. The actual film, though, let's really talk about the film. I mean, assuming that, I guess professionals would state how we felt about the original Dune. My memory is we both liked it. Am I collapsing it too much? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it felt kind of a bit like half a movie in a way that was a lot of setup. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this delivered on that setup. I think that the first one, I liked, I didn't love. I think visually and in the in all its design was incredible.
Yes.
I think it did a good job setting us up. But, like, I mean, this movie is very, very different in its pacing, and it's yeah. what it portrays. And it's, like, it hits the ground running, and it's, like, big scene, big scene, big scene, big scene. Mm-hmm. There's no, almost no exposition. Everything is visual storytelling.
Yeah, it's
better for it.
As metaphorical and, like, weird as the first one was, and willing to be, like a tone poem in places, in the places where it wasn't doing a lot of heavy exposition up front, this movie is very much, like you're saying, like, hit the ground running, very visceral, much more, like, real and impactful, and a lot of characters, like going through things and feeling emotions, and, yeah, it's different, but in a complementary way. I think the two, I imagine if I were to watch them back to back, would really work together and really fulfill the problems or foibles of each other. I loved every part of how this movie moved and kept close enough to what I know of this, of the source text, but did interesting things with it. And every actor, as far as I was concerned, was fantastic. Everybody was doing a great job in this. I thought I was worried about Timmy in the second movie and whether or not he could be tough. He was.
I feel like he has it in a way. I don't know. It's hard to. I'm trying to find an actor comparison, but I can't. But he just has the like svelte warrior shape kind of that works. I think my favorite things in his performances is the way he shifts, like in the movie, like it feels like he's playing kind of multiple characters because he's so undecisive about what he wants to do, like what the character wants to do,
right.
Until he makes his decision and just goes full on, like full I'm the Messiah, I'm
the son of Abe. The prophet, yes,
yeah, I'm the prophet, exactly. And It really the performance really works for me, I think. I mean, all the performances across this movie. I think the only one that felt a bit weird was Josh Brolin, who is kind of is feels a little out of place because he's just playing like a guy among like a bunch of like religious. Like in the middle of religious talks, he's like, "Oh, you got some nukes, by the way," in a very like normal man who's not in his place. But I think that kind of works. I mean, he is another. I mean, he's shown in opposition to the way Paul is integrating the free men, and he's not like he's not even interested in it. He's just amongst them, but always stand out.
Yeah. Yeah, he feels like the connection to the old, to the previous Paul and who he used to be. And he's whatever Paul's into, he'll be there. He'll be right by him, but he's not interested in, you know, joining too hard or believing too hard. It's very interesting. I like the way in which he plays certain scenes, specifically with Zendaya. But yeah, you're right. He has a very similar energy to Momoa in the first movie. Where it really feels like he's just a dude, like you're saying. Just like a guy. Just a normal guy, kind of.
I mean, Zendaya is really great in this movie. I think I've not seen her, like... I've seen her in movies, but I haven't really seen her act, I guess.
Yeah, I guess there's a lot of that in Euphoria, but I just don't.
I haven't seen that. Like, I've seen her in Spider-Man movies. like I think I know her as a celebrity. I mean, Challengers didn't come out before, which I feel like it was supposed to. That's the movie I'm the most anticipating mm-hmm. she's in. But yeah, it's the first time for me really seeing her act, and she's great. She just gives a really, really strong performance. She plays the voice of reason in the mm-hmm. middle of the devoted Freeman. She plays kind of, I mean, it's interesting because I haven't read Dune, I've only read the first couple of chapters or something, and it just wasn't in the right mindset to read it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the way I heard her character described in the book, where she's just like his concubine and accepts what's going on. I mean, this is so much smarter and really
mm-hmm.
accentuates the points that, I mean, Frank Herbert was trying to make with those books. I mean, he wrote the first book, and people were really seeing themselves more in Paul. And the way, I mean, Dune Messiah is described is the book that's like, that's not what I was trying to do. I was trying to, I mean, talk about religion mm-hmm. And the way it controls, I mean, it can be used to control people, and it's a tool. How it's used in this story as a tool of the most powerful to control a population. I mean, to colonize, basically.
Yeah, and to keep, and in some ways to keep people in line. You know, it's the. I loved the speech that she gives about, like, if you tell people there's going to be a messiah, they'll wait for the messiah to do anything.
I mean, the whole story of the movie is that they made up that story, right? It's like it's the thing I didn't know about the story as a whole is how, like, okay, that legend of them, of the Nisangar that's going to come back and save us and liberate us. It comes from the sisters, like the order of the sisters, and it's just a tool that was put in place in case they wanted to take power over the Freeman. I mean, I think the movie is really in your face about all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and it kind of has to be, because if it wasn't, the story itself kind of borders the line of I mean, I think when you're making a blockbuster movie, you kind of have to be so direct with your message, and this movie is very, very direct. I mean, I think something that's very interesting, and I think I mentioned this in passing to you, but I didn't get into it, is like how Denis Villeneuve talks about how this movie is really inspired by him growing up during the what we call like the Révolution Tranquille, the soft revolution, basically, which is when basically Quebec pushed religion out of politics in the way that it was really a tool used by Canadian and Canadian a lot, and Quebecois as well, politicians, to control the population, especially outside the big cities. Mm-hmm. And it was like really the first step in going in making Quebec a more like state, and really separating religion and make a Catholic religion and making it like not the enemy, but
mm-hmm.
just challenging how it was used before and how it was used really to control the people, make them like convince them to work harder, to have more children, to stay in poverty in some ways.
Yeah, to
And he like he grew up pre that and during that, and it's something that really influenced his vision of religion and how it's portrayed in this movie. Those themes of are it felt very clear watching that movie, like the in what ways it inspired him specifically.
And I think it gives, it's just sort of the larger point, is like, it gives more momentum to the characters. I don't think this movie would be as interesting if both Zendaya and Rebecca Ferguson both didn't have so much momentum in their stories that I can just tell you from the previous adaptation by David Lynch, those characters did not have that momentum in that movie. So much of the momentum was done by, like, voiceover. And narration that was very distracting, and like having these characters state the point of the movie so directly gave these characters interesting points of view to come from, and just made them just gave those characters something to do and gave the places to move in interesting ways that only helped what the movie was about and what the movie is trying to say. So yeah, it was perfect on that level.
I mean, also visually, it's immediately like I mentioned the first movie, how what it does visually in its effects and the design. This movie is so fast. Like the first scenes of the Harkonnen soldiers in the sand, where they're like floating up, like kind of like doing. It's like they're half, they're jumping and just floating up. It's super slow. It looks, I was like immediately blown away, and I was like, okay, I'm all in this movie already. It started off so strong, and I think it just builds on top of that. Like all the sandworm stuff is incredible. I think the one thing that didn't work for me as well is like, I guess. I guess it was easy to kind of let it wash over me while I was watching it in a way, but a lot of the dialogue felt so like overly dramatic and like in the kind of Hollywood classic epic kind of way, which is something that I kind of like and I don't like at the same time. I guess I'm just more used to watching that kind of movie, but because I was with people that hated the way like people talked in this movie, and I kind of got it at the beginning, and then I was just like, it's just something that stops bothering me at some point, you know?
Yeah, I think you get into the flow of it. Again, you know, to go back to the first movie, I think it's akin to the way that first movie is like a lot of its tone. In a similar but different way to Oppenheimer, and like it's really hoping that you will just like vibe with the visuals and the use of music. A lot of that first movie is like this very hypnotic score and these big, crazy, like old school sci-fi book cover visuals. You will just like key into that and like flow with it. And I think it's doing a very similar thing with the dialogue, the very specific and very like play acting dialogue in ways. It feels very theatrical and very big and broad in that way. But I think it really works with the story that's being told. Like this is a very big theatrical story. Very much told that way.
Yes. Exactly. I mean, it feels like they kind of talk like in a David Lean movie.
Yes.
The script is kind of like that, and it's. I mean, like I said, it's fine, but it's also like, it felt a bit, at times like it, too much of that. Like I kind of missed. Like the more lostness of the tone of the first. I mean, the first movie follows Paul so directly that you're kind of put
it's a bit into more...
his shoe, discovering, like, kind of discovering the rules of the world he's in that he mm-hmm. never really understood.
And his role is a bit more naturalistic. Yeah, it's like it's because yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's a lot of him like talking to his like his, you know, in you know, quotes family in the largest possible sense. Like
yeah.
So it, I think that works for the movie. This movie, it's a lot of him like grappling with these larger ideas and like code switching and things like
yeah, that. Yeah, exactly. And I think I wish there was more, like, left to, like, more, I don't know, it felt like the intentions were, throughout this movie, were so direct,
mm-hmm.
and everyone is speaking kind of what they're doing. There's no, I think I would have liked more imagery, more like...
Yeah, that's something I missed from the first
one. Yeah. Yeah, like the first movie has more of that, and this movie has like the visions, and it has, I mean, the sandworm scene is the closest to that. Like it's really really well done.
Yes, but it's overall though it's not as moody. Like I think of my favorite example is Timmy just walking on the beach and like the like this like synth guitar like very acidy guitar noises going on, and he's just like watching spaceships dock, and it's just like this big image of like stuff up in the air, and it just holds on that for a very long time. It's just like and overwhelming you with the music, and it's very like emo, and there's not as much of that, but you know, like even the dream sequences feel almost rushed. But I understand it at the same time because they're covering a lot of story in a big movie, but it does, like, it still feels condensed. It still feels like, well, they could have spread this out over a longer period of time and made it a bit moodier if they wanted to. But I understand practical reasons and stuff, and will people sit through a 3.5-hour version of this? You know, all that stuff. Yeah.
I mean, there's so much this movie is trying to fit in a way that it does in the end feel like, I mean, the Lynch movie,
mm-hmm.
a very different movie.
Yes.
It fits this whole movie in its last 30 minutes.
Yeah.
But even this movie feels like it could fit another movie in its last like 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
20 minutes.
Yeah. They just sneak
I read the book is kind of like this, so mm-hmm. and I don't think it bothers me as much. But like the whole conflict in the end, it really goes by so fast. The one thing I'll give the Lynch movie is I think I like the fight scene, the knife fight at the end. I like it more in the Lynch movie.
Yeah.
Because it's so much about, but because it's very different, right? I feel like mm-hmm. in the Lynch movie, it's all about like he's become incredibly powerful to the point that no one is on his level, and this makes him like
almost disposable. It makes
him exactly. It makes him feel like, oh, maybe he can't really see the future, actually.
Right. Maybe.
Right.
It builds off the rest of the movie. It builds off the first movie. You know, it's the final battle at the end of that movie, which is, you know, he has to contend with the fact that his visions told him that he, you know, have this great friendship with this guy who he's about to have to murder. And it plays off of, and that is the one thing that, like, I think the multi-year separation does, is certain things just didn't play as well as if I had seen Dune Part 1 like right before, and I wish I had. I still haven't had a chance to rewatch it, but like it was pointed out to me that final fight is essentially like a recreation of the fight with him and Brolin when they're doing like the training thing, and you're getting to know Brolin, and he has the whole speech about, you know, the Harkonnens are brutal, you know. It's essentially the exact same fight, and he wins that fight the same way that Brolin wins that fight in the training
thing.
But I had no idea. I didn't even remember that until it was pointed out. So, yeah, lots of stuff like that. Lots of thematic stuff that when you're reminded of it from Dune Part 1, you're like,
the separation works for me because the movies feel like separated by the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I think if they had come out, I don't know, like The Matrix 2 and 3, they came out like 6 months apart.
Right.
I feel like if maybe, I think this way, a few years in between really gives the character time to feel more lived in, like those yes. relationships feel more lived in that way. And I think the way doing Shani this way, like at the scene at the end where he's like, I'll always like love you, mm-hmm. and then says he's gonna marry
Irulan,
Florence Pugh, Florence Pugh, who's in this movie.
Yes, there's a lot of like, oh yeah, they're in this movie, like my girl is in this movie.
One scene.
You know, and I saw her on the red carpet. I was like, that's weird. I wonder who she is. She in the movie? Of course she is, and she's the fetus. And the fetus even has Anya Taylor-Joy eyes at one point. It's like, huh? They made a baby with Anya Taylor-Joy eyes. It's very. Somebody had to write that down on a piece of paper, say, make this. And they're like, okay, I'll do that. among the many other strange requests. But, you know, like, Christopher Walken is in here, and he's doing all right. He's fine. So that brings me to one thing. I like the choice to focus so heavily on Chani and Jessica. I do think the Harkonnen stuff is a bit weaker in this movie. I don't know if that's just a result of having to, like, make them lose in this instead of win. You know, it's just, like, the natural cycle.
Yeah, I mean, the movie has to make Batista's character seem right. like a loser.
Yeah.
Immediately, so that, like, Austin Butler can take over.
Right.
And feel more dangerous than him.
Yeah, and make Skarsgård less intimidating and scary. It's in the same way, like they have to show him as like a sickly old man, you know, not the guy floating up into the air, my Arrakis. Like you have to cut some of that and undercut some of it in order to.
Yeah, I think what they do. I mean, I like Skarsgård's voice and face performance, but I think the Baron is a lot.
Yes,
I'm not a super fan of those scenes,
especially in this movie. I didn't like him as much in this movie. Like, he's one of my favorite parts of the first movie is his performance and how weird and creepy he is. And in this one, it's just like, okay, he's just not as interesting.
I really like what they do visually on their planet.
Yes,
where it's that's like all shot in infrared.
Mm-hmm.
There's basically all the only color you see is like their veins. I think all that stuff is really good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think those scenes have to be like cartoonishly evil
mm-hmm.
in a way that is lacking a bit subtlety.
And again,
it's a big Hollywood epic. It's not like a
right.
It's like
a lot of it's flat.
It's kind of in between the big a lot of it is flattened. Yeah, exactly. It's like it has like those hard sci-fi roots. You can see them, but it's like it's flattened to be a blockbuster movie that basically anyone can enjoy in a way. But it works overall. It's just, I guess that subs keep it from being like a true great movie in the way that I feel like, I think I like Arrival more than these two movies. I think I like Blade Runner more. I think those movies are more.
I agree. Yeah.
Get to be more subtle about their ideas. But yes. I mean. Sicario as well. But I think I like both the movies. It's just Villeneuve has made a bunch of great movies.
Yes. And it's, even though I agree with everything you just said, like, it's great that a big blockbuster like this is still as weird as it is. Like, that's still great.
Yeah, yeah.
It's still great that it's as strange and weird, and that they're maybe going to make a third one, and I know things about the third book, and the third one gets really weird, even weirder, so somehow. I'm very excited to see how that's going to work. I know that in the books, like, Johnny is just, like, as you, I think you mentioned, she's just, like, down. She's in. She's all in on Paul at the end of the second
Or first book. Yeah, so. When they do return that last scene, well, like I said, him breaking her heart, it feels so, it's so felt and it's so brutal.
Yeah.
And it really resonated, I think. And having her really be,
and I love hearing that audiences felt that as well. Like,
be kind of the, exactly. You have someone that you can, because it's in that kind of movie. In the first movie, Paul is kind of Luke in a way, right? He has those, that, like, hero's journey, kind of the beginning of it, at least. And in this movie, it's very clear his intentions are not the good of the people, even though it may kind of seem that way if you're looking at that first glance. And having Shani be, like, the only, I mean, not the only, but being an opposing force ideologically is and the way also Timothée Chalamet portrays him, being very changing completely the character as soon as he's becoming the Messiah, like, he rejects all his, I mean, he rejects, he's no longer, I mean, for the beginning of this movie, he's trying so hard to be one of the freemen, to become one of them. And then he rejects it. He says, I'm Paul Atreides. He uses the name Atreides again. He's like, I like,
and then he even rejects that eventually. Duke. Like,
I mean, he when he's in the middle of all of them and he's not supposed to talk, he says his title because it's. I mean, it's kind of the reason why he's doing this. Like, he's taking control of the Freeman to have his revenge and to take the power that he believes should be his hereditary. Like, he believes it's his hereditary power to take what his father has and even more as a payment for revenge. He's not doing us out of goodness for the Freeman.
Right.
Clearly.
No, it's all, it becomes both, well, it becomes about, well, practicality, but also, like, well, this is just, if this serves my goals, the line, if we're Harkonnens, so we're going to fight like Harkonnens, says a lot about it. And, you know, and I think that's part of the softening of the Harkonnens also in this movie, is like, and making them a little less alien, is like, he is what he needs to be in the moment. He is, if he needs to be the Messiah, he'll play the role of the Messiah. If he needs to be Paul Atreides, he'll be Paul Atreides. If he needs to be cruel and heartless and, you know, attack at every artery the way that the Harkonnens do, he's going to do that as well. Like, he molds himself into whatever he needs to be. And I think that's a really smart way to present him. And it goes to the larger, you know, themes and the stories that inspired this story, Lawrence of Arabia, of course, being one of them. That's a part of that movie that is often left out of conversations about that movie, is like, he's a character who adjusts to the moment, and he ultimately becomes the bad guy at the end. it's the point of the movie. I think it works for this version of the story, and that's the part I think that Chalamet really sells, is that, like, I will adjust as I need to get this done and to take the power. So Yeah, it's a good movie. I think it plays with all these themes excellently. I think
I think it does all that stuff very well. I think my I guess problems with it are more in the form, I guess, more than the storytelling. I think the storytelling is great.
Yes, I agree. I think, unless you had a final thought there, I think we can go to one of our other recent releases.
We did watch a couple of lesbian crime dramas.
Yes, that came out not too far apart, are more similar than I expected them to be. In interesting ways, but let's start with Drive Away Dolls. Now, Eric, this is an important place to start from. The movie is meant to be like a comedy, right? Like it is meant to be like a romp, right?
It's the most I laughed in a movie theater in a long, long time. I don't think I've laughed this much in like years, basically. I was watching it with a friend, and we were the only ones laughing that loud. Like, clearly we were having the time of our lives, and people were like kind of confused about the whole thing. But yeah, I had a great time watching this.
Yes, very similar. Once I realized what the tone was supposed to be, I was like, oh, this is fucking hilarious. This is great. just everybody delivering killer lines. Margaret Qualley, who I've been following since The Leftovers, just her accent is so
Her accent is so delicious. Ridiculous. I'm not an expert on American accents. I've said it many times, but I know her accent is bad, and I know it's very funny.
It's hilarious. It's hysterical, and it's like it's the same accent as that we did one of their first movies from like 84, the brothers. It's the same accent as that movie, and it's just a cartoon like send up of that, and it's perfect. I just thought every like even the people who showed up just for like a small amount of lines, their tone was excellent. I really liked Bill Camp as the guy who runs the rental car place. Don't call me Crowley. Isn't that your name tag? Just everything about him and his delivery of, and he's a fantastic like New York actor. I know him from a lot of HBO stuff, where he always plays just like the most serious like detective or lawyer. And this was just perfect. He's playing like a Simpsons character in this. I loved it.
Oh yeah, he's so funny in this. He's really really good. I feel like I've seen him in... I can't remember. Isn't he in...
He's been in a lot of stuff lately.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he... Isn't he in a Fincher movie, maybe?
That sounds right. That's sounds like he might... He seems like someone who might be.
Yeah, okay, no, he's in... Yeah, he's in a bunch of... Molly's Game, News of the World. I've seen him in that. Yes. Yeah, okay.
He's in Lincoln... He's unfortunately for him in Sound of Freedom, among other things.
He the janitor in Queen's Gambit. I think that's right. What I remember him.
I think that's
where I remember him from.
And he's the detective. He's one of the detectives in Joker as well. He's just great like New York actor.
Great guy that you love to have in a movie.
Yes, he's perfect. Of course, Pedro at the very beginning giving an insane...
Enjoy on Pedro's head.
Yes. Oh, the scare face on his fake head. Perfect. I laughed my way through the whole thing. The plot is like, okay, the plot is very goofy, but I was also like, oh, this actually, some of this makes sense. Some of this, I feel like this, I wouldn't be surprised if it's based off of like an article or something from like a Florida newspaper. and the setting it in like 1999, I think, is perfect. It gives a very specific time period for everything happening. I really love the inclusion of Matt Damon and the Miley Cyrus of it all.
Oh yeah, the Miley Cyrus stuff. Like, the first time that shows up, I was like, this is funny. And the more and more you see of it, that you realize it's, oh yeah, it's a flashback from Miley Cyrus playing, like, a sex demon that kind of made the ceramic dildos, yeah. Version of his dildo, a ceramic dildo out of his dick. It's so funny. It's really, really completely ridiculous. This movie is very dumb. Like, all the stuff, like the two shitty these two guys that kind of follow them, like, are one more stupid than the other. All the stuff with, like, okay, they stop at the restaurant, they meet, like, a bunch of cheerleaders and go to the house party, and then she gets arrested. Completely ridiculous. Very, yeah. Very funny.
Oh, I loved them so much. And they're just, like, the dumber versions of the Fargo guys. They're just, like, but way goofier, way more played up. I just, very good. And it does make me re-examine certain movies. I'm wondering if Hail Caesar was meant to be more like this. At some point, maybe Hail Caesar was made too serious, or maybe I just watched it wrong, because
Hail Caesar is very funny.
Yeah,
I think it's not this level. I mean, this is like, it's trying to be a B movie, like it's trying to be like one of those like early 2000s comedy, like late 90s, early 2000s. Yes. Like it's really going for that.
It feels like a Farley Brothers.
I mean, this is also better. Not like. This is also not a Coen Brothers movie in that same way, right? It's,
yes.
It's like Trisha Cuckoo, Ethan Coen's wife, Ethan Coen's lesbian wife. That's they're still married, but they're not together.
Perfect.
Very cool relationship, honestly.
Yeah.
Also, they're making a trilogy of these movies.
I didn't. This is the first time hearing of that news, and
the second one, is the second one. I mean, it's a trilogy of scripts. I think that she wrote, and yeah, the second one is called All the Honey Don't, and has Margaret Qualley, Aubrey Plaza, and Chris Evans. And Margaret Qualley is a detective. A private investigator, Evans a cult leader, and it's like a detective story, but also it's like a lesbian B-movie trilogy. That's what they said they're making.
I love all of this. I love every aspect of this. Give it to me. I mean, I don't have much else to say about this movie specifically, other than just, like, very funny. I really like... Geraldine Viswanathan.
Yeah, she's really good. She's really good. I think she's the core of a lot of this movie.
Yeah, if there's like a dramatic core to it, she's like she's most of it. And she's very good.
I think the movie is. Not that it's completely ridiculous in this movie. I mean, I wish he wasn't in the trailer. I guess that's the thing. If it feels like it would have been so much better if it was one of these movies, because there's a few where he just appears out of nowhere. But since he was in the trailer, I knew he was gonna show up at some point.
Yeah. Well, I had forgotten, and then I got a good look at the guy they had playing young Matt Damon. I was like, well, he's clearly supposed to be a young Matt Damon type. So Matt Damon's in this, right? Because there are very few people that look like young Matt Damon. Let's see. I'm looking through the cast, see if we miss anybody. Beanie Feldstein's funny in this. She's not overused. She's perfectly used. I like that she beats up the two beats up the two goons. That was perfect. Very very good reversal of what you expect there.
I guess overall, and Coleman Domingo, always like him. he has like a very good screen presence. I guess it's just a very fun movie. I don't think there's that much that much about it. I think it's so interesting that Ethan Coen made this, and Joel Coen made The Tragedy of Macbeth.
Yeah, it's the thing that we've been saying. It's like, are we gonna see, like, are we gonna learn who did what on the other movies? I think we did.
But I mean, I think these movies, like Ethan Coen and Trisha Cook wrote together. And
yes.
Maybe Ethan Coen really wanted to make them, and Joel Coen was not interested. I mean, that also makes sense. I feel like maybe in their later life, that's where their interest lies. I don't know how much is. I mean, I don't think I'm thinking, okay, like Ethan Coen is more a comedy guy and Joel Coen is more the drama guy.
I think it makes sense
for them to separate if this is the kind of movies they're making, I guess. Joel Coen was making movies with his wife too, right?
Yes, that's the thing. I'm thinking, yes. Well, and Frances is apparently, depending on who you ask, she's a big part of every one of the movies that she's in. She is a big presence in the movie and like how the movie goes and what the tone of the movie is, specifically when she's in the
movie. Trisha Cook was an editor on a lot of the other movies as well.
Right.
It's like there's a lot of like a symbiotic relationship out of like them and their relations and making these movies.
Mm-hmm. And I could see part of it being like, that's the kind of stuff Frances wants to do as well. Like, she wants to be, like, big Shakespearean stuff. Like, or that's, like, the tone that she's interested in. Not that she can't. I mean, she's been very funny in movies, but it just might be, that might be part of it as well. I think we can kind of transition here into Love Lies Bleeding. What did you think of this movie? Eric, as someone who you haven't seen St. Maud yet, or you did you manage to?
I have not seen St. Maud.
Yes.
I like this movie. I think it's really just a pretty solid car movie with a very very solid cast as well. I think I think Kristen Stewart is amazing. I think Katie O'Brien is her name. I mean, she's not an actress, right? She's just like
she's
a,
not. Yeah.
I don't know if you saw the tweet where she's like I don't know, it was like the studio, like I think it was a variety story, is like studio is looking for a bodybuilder to act with opposite Kristen Stewart in this movie, and she just replied like or quote tweeted and says, "What about me?" and with a picture of her like built, and she got the role like years later. So, I mean, she shots her shot. I mean, she's been in a couple of things.
Yeah, she's an Ant-Man,
I guess,
which wasn't the best sell for her, I would say. Not that she's bad in Ant-Man, but like, it wasn't like a good demonstration of her abilities, like this movie is. I would argue.
And she's in Mando.
Yeah, I don't remember her in Mando. I couldn't tell you.
Kane. I have no idea what character that is.
No, yeah. Yeah. I will watch all the Star Wars, but I don't... You can't ask me to remember any goddamn thing about any of it. So, yeah. But she's very good in this. I'm very curious to see where things go. But this performance is very good. This movie's a lot more acid-dipped than I expected it to be. Way weirder. I was expecting like a very by the book like crime movie in like a very long tradition of crime movies. Again, like the Coen movie that I previously mentioned, but I refuse to look up the name of because no. and it went more in the Saint Maud direction. it goes in places that that are explored in that movie, because that movie plays a lot with like mental illness and like in sort of slight degrees of magical realism, which I didn't know if Rose Glass was a director who would take their style with them to every movie that they did, or if they were someone who, you know, adjusts to what the script is. And this movie, it very much feels like this is their thing. There's a thing that they're doing, and the like very strange reality bending, almost semi mystical parts of this movie were very enjoyable and surprising to me. It added another level to a thing that I already like, which is gritty crime drama. I very much enjoyed that. And then just like it felt, this could almost be a subgenre of movie, which is movies where a person really tells you what their kinks are. And I don't mean to presume, but I feel it. I feel it in this movie. And I don't mind it. I don't mind. Keep living your bliss, Rose Glass, if that's what's going on here. If that is the case, good for you. I'm happy for you. Look,
I'm pro directors putting their finishes in movies. Like, yes. I'm pro Quentin Tarantino feet shots.
Yes, it's like, fun to look for them.
It's better when it's not subtle. It's just like just put it in. Like,
yeah.
You like Muslim women? Put them in movies.
Yeah. You were looking at muscle magazines when you were young, and that's interesting.
I mean, yeah, this movie is. I mean, the way this movie portrays like bodybuilding and the muscles and all that stuff, it's really, it's really it's fetishistic in some ways. I mean, in the similar ways that Predator does it, you know?
Yeah. It's very similar.
It feels so inspired by those like Arnold movies, and the way those movies are just very homoerotic, but it's all undertone. This is just, there's no undertone. There's no subtlety. It's just tone. It's like muscles, hot. Muscles are hot, and this is what I like.
Muscles are hot. Red lighting looks cool. Like, exactly.
Also, I feel like we need to talk about Ed Harris in this movie.
He's doing
like five things. Like,
yes.
Like that character, just the hair, the face, the makeup, all that stuff is incredible, and then the performance is really, really good. I feel like if I didn't know it was him, I wouldn't have noticed.
Yeah.
Was like, where do I know him from? I would have had that feeling if I didn't know.
Yes.
He was in this.
And all the detail, this is to the point I said about the other movie, it feels like there's like an article somewhere that this is based off of. It feels like there's like an article from like a small Arizona newspaper and like a real true crime story that this is like ripping off, because it just, all the little details feel so specific and interesting, and the way these characters, incorporate those things into their performances. All of it just worked so well for me. And I just love, like, the dialogue is very simple and direct, but everybody just feels so perfect for their characters. Dave Franco is the most Dave Franco he's ever been, but it's just.
Yeah, no, exactly. Dave Franco is pretty good at being a shithead. The movie is co-written also by Veronica Tofilska, who's not a name I knew, but is like a TV director. They kind of went to school together, her and Rose Glass, which I find interesting. Writer on like a director from some his Dark Materials episodes and stuff like that. Like a bunch of random TV, but. Yeah, also, I mean, I kind of really like the script of this movie. It's really fun. I like the vision, the way taking testosterone is portrayed also is really, really interesting. I mean, the abuse of it is, it feels like the abuse of it is going more by like cartoon rules. This is where the movie kind of feels more where it's getting close to magical realism.
Yes.
I mean, there is one scene that really made me laugh out loud so hard. When she just shows up and she's giant. Yes. And it's like, is the movie actually doing that? And then it's like, yes. Okay, no, it's just, I mean, it's clearly like metaphor, but still, yeah. It's like, I was like, for a second, I thought this is what the movie, like she was just turning into the Hulk, like literally right. And becoming giant. But it's all like, I guess, distorted reality in a way that right. I think really works. I think it's a yeah. it's a really it's a pretty fun crime drama. I think it has it I mean I think we both love Kristen Stewart as an actress. She's incredible. She's so good at playing like stressed. Yeah, I feel like. She's playing that anxiety. Like,
it's her like base motion.
She's like trying to hide the body. Like she has a few times in this movie, she has a body to deal with, and she's like very on edge. And yeah. I think she plays that really well. I think she plays that really well. Also in Personal Shopper, I really love her in that. And a couple of other things, but yeah, she's just a really really good actress. I think she carries this movie so well.
Yeah, and I it's a small thing, but like I really believed her and Jenna Malone as sisters. It's a small thing that sells that whole backstory. Just and their whole interaction with each other, and like small little things that you know, that between siblings that only siblings know. And it's like it's only a couple small scenes, but just the way that they look at each other is just I very much appreciated this movie. This was a very welcoming experience for me. I was very transfixed by every choice. And again, I wasn't necessarily expecting Katie O'Brien to turn into a giant. But I was happy to see it.
Yeah. Then when they're both giants and they walk into the calls, I'm like, oh, okay, this is what we're doing.
Yes. Yes.
For a moment, I really wanted her to be giant.
I wanted.
Was like, are you doing the thing where are they gonna have sex when one is giant and the other is small? Because I feel like I kept hearing people talk about like how intense the sex scenes were in this movie, and I think there's like some stuff there. But it's very, I guess it's very normal.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's like an adult movie with. It's not an erotic thriller, but it's like it has those like very very realistic kind of sex scenes. Nothing too out there. So I really thought like they were gonna do something like that at the end. For a second, I was like, "Oh, is this why people are so weird about this movie?" And then it's like, "Oh no, this is it's just
crazy."
And then I wish that what it was.
Yeah, I do as well. I wish it had gone kind of a I'm a Virgo plays with this a lot, actually. The idea of a giant person and a regular sized person, and what that relationship was like. I that would have been interesting. That would have been very
interesting. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I'm just more making fun about like the ideas I had about this movie. I mean, I think
I had a very similar idea. I was very much expecting like I was kind of expecting like the Cinemax movie type thing deal, but like no more than Bound, I would say.
Exactly. I mean, no more than we watched like Out of Sight or something. Like,
yes.
You watch like a 90s era movie with some eroticism, and it's like kind of the same level as that. I mean, you watch. There's more. I don't know. It's just a movie for adults.
No, that's something I appreciate.
I guess scene that's very the most explicit is the one where she's like, "Show me how you finger herself." Mm-hmm. But I mean, that just gives. There's so much character shown out of both of them in that moment. I think it's just a really, really good scene in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, their relationship just builds very naturally in a way that makes sense. It just felt, yeah, you buy it. Every reaction that comes later, very good. And I really like the explosiveness of, I think you mentioned this, of like when she like really roids out, the way it's depicted, it's almost it's horror movie-esque, which works with rose glass. And I would describe her in her like roid rage as similar to Barbarian and the titular barbarian creature. It's very similar in the way in which she just dispatches people and like slams people's heads off and stuff like that. It's just, yeah, it's very good, very 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 thorough. So this has been an episode.
three new movies, yes. Not even one old one.
Not even.
You got a treat today.
Yeah. Is there
anything else you've watched that you want to mention before we close?
One that I don't think you'll watch. Maybe you will. I don't know. Let's see how well I can sell it. Late Night with the Devil. Shudder release that's doing really well. Big surprise.
Is it actually
to me.
On Shudder? I thought it was playing in theaters only.
It is theaters, but it's Shudder end of this month.
Okay.
Very close to, and they're doing that a lot. And something I'm really enjoying is Shudder is being very strict, it seems, with their trailers and such. I showed up expecting to have to sit through 10 minutes of trailers, and the movie was just starting. it was just going. And this has been a frequent complaint of mine, which is movie theaters just jamming trailers and like Mountain Dew commercials in before movies. The movie's, I really enjoyed it. I had heard that it like is bad at the end. I had heard that it kind of falls apart. And for those who don't know the movie, the premise is it's like the found footage of like a TV special from the 70s. By a late night host who invites like a Reagan from The Exorcist situation onto his network. It's not one for one. They give it a few more details that are more interesting and kind of the time. And they live on television do some, you know, experiment with demons and summoning supernatural creatures. Things go awry. Also, you mentioned the Matrix movies earlier. The guy who plays Smith when he possesses a man is in the movie as like a magician. And I spent about a good 30 minutes being like, where the hell do I know this man from? Where do I know this? And I'm like, and then I remember the movie is Australian its directors are Australians. That's the guy. That's Agent Smith from The Matrix. But yeah, it's like a very, they do a really good job of presenting the 70s aesthetic in a way that I felt it was authentic and not distracting, but they didn't forget about story and like having the story be mostly compelling. A lot of weight is put on David Desmalchin, who, you've seen him in things. Everybody has seen
him. I like him in stuff. I think he was one of the best parts of those the two Ant-Man movies he's in. I think the third one suffers from not having those guys in it.
Yep. Even T.I., despite other things going on.
He's also fun in Suicide Squad. He's in... in some Nolan stuff. He's a guy.
He's one of those guys, and he sells the like 70s TV talk show thing really well, and it's a very well done creepy movie that I was very happy to see in a theater. And I think it helped with the presentation, but I don't think it would have any problem working at home on a television as well. So if you can see it in a theater, go for it. It seems to be doing really well. I remember the week that it came out, it was like breaking some records for like, you know, a small distribution thing. So that was very nice to hear. And but it will be on Shudder, I think, sort of end of the month for people who want to watch it.
Yeah, it looks like next, I mean, probably is on Shudder by the time this episode comes out.
Possibly,
yes. It comes out on the 19th. I'll watch it. It was on my list. It's like, I think I heard like mixed thing about it, but you liking it makes me want to watch it. I think the only things I've heard more about it is like when I watched the trailer, people were commenting that a little girl doesn't have 70s voice, and I was like, yeah, that's kind of true. Which sure. is and like the AI stuff with the like title cards thing, I think they use AI to make some title cards, which is just a weird, like, it's not something that bothers me that much. It's just
right
feels like a weird decision in a movie that cares so much about like the era it's supposed to be set in.
Yeah,
but it is what it is. It's like you have to save a few dollars. Right. What you gotta do.
And they made those like a year ago or even before then. So yeah. It's before it really became the discussion that it has become. It's pre Secret Invasion, a television show nobody remembers. Not even me, the person who watched it. Other than that, I had nothing. Was there like a smaller release that you
saw? I did finally watch a movie I've been talking about watching for a while. I watched Humanist Vampire Seeking Consenting Suicidal Person. Is about what the title says it is. And I really liked it. I mean, it's a coming of age, it's a Quebecois movie, it's coming like a first time director, I think maybe not first time actress, but she's like her first time as a starring in a movie, and she's really the actress, she's really good, and the movie is very, I mean, it's a nice coming of age movie. It's very vibey, and it has its moments. I mean, it's like about like a vampire and a vampire girl who can't bring herself to kill someone to drink their blood, and like a teenage boy she meets that's like suicidal and hates his whole life, and is like. His life really, really sucks. And you can see, like, that's exactly why he is where he is. And it's like, kind of, trying to be an actual vampire and kill someone, and him trying to find, like, any meaning to his life, even if it's dying, to help someone live. It's really cute. It has its moments. I'd recommend it. It's rare that you get like Quebecois like genre pictures that are. It reminds me a lot about A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, that Iranian movie. I'd recommend it.
There's a strong subgenre of indie vampire movies that are very existential. Yeah. We've talked about them before. One that I really enjoyed maybe 2 years ago is My Heart Only Beats Because You Tell It To. Like, it's a thriving genre. It's a good metaphor for dread, existential dread and loneliness and just all these things. Just perfect way to deliver those ideas. So I'm definitely gonna watch this, but you saying that you enjoyed it, it's gonna get to it a bit faster, so
I'd be curious what you think. It's rare that I can recommend a Quebecois movie, so when I can, I need to. I mean, Dune 2 is a Quebecois movie, kind of,
right? I say you should be allowed to say that.
So I think that's it for this week. Let's do maybe some plugs. You can send us an email at videoscopepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us at videoscopepod on Twitter, Instagram, and follow me on those platforms and Letterboxd at ECUR.
Yes.
And
to Eric's follows, and I'm there somewhere. I'm somewhere. Or I'm following. Or my favorite suggestion is go into his diary and find where I've commented. And sometimes I'm trolling him.
sometimes. Yeah, it's. You say that, but actually, I feel like your letterbox is in the description of this show. So you can just also go there.
Yes.
And we'll be back next week with maybe Knight Riders. The George Romero movie.
I'm going to say this.
Maybe something else.
Going forward, pay attention to what we put in the description of the episode.
Yeah.
Whatever it's going to be, it'll be there. It'll be there. Whatever the next one's going to be. Assuming that websites don't not put the episode out a week after I schedule them, which is a thing that happened. So there's an episode with a 2-week gap between it, the last episode and that one. So, I may be just no gap for an episode coming up. You'll see. Maybe you're hearing this a week after his motorbike, Her Island. Who knows? Anyway, bye. See you on the next one.
I'm trying to do the Dune thing. I really don't have it.